rare earths are involved with everyday life to a very great extent.
How much would a Chinese ban on rare earth material hurt the West? You might be surprised. This is Friday, the 7th of June, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. You are part of this program. All you have to do is join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, President Trump says diplomatic efforts with North Korea are going well, even as Pyongyang warns its patience is wearing thin. A controversial raid on the offices of one of Australia's biggest news organizations. All on today's VOA Asia. Chinese rare earth prices are set to climb further beyond multi-year highs hit following a flurry of state media reports that Beijing would weaponize or could weaponize its supply dominance of the prized minerals in its trade war with Washington. Following Washington's decision to ban Huawei and some 70 affiliates over national security concerns, China's been looking for a high-tech counterpunch to use in response. Some believe that as tensions between the world's two biggest economies rise, Beijing is considering playing what state media have called the ace up its sleeve and cutting rare earth exports to the United States. China is the world's biggest supplier of the minerals that are necessary for a range of tech products, from smartphones to computers and the batteries in hybrid cars. U.S. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross has said the United States will take unprecedented steps to ensure that the country does not end up cut off from the vital resource. The Commerce Department released a report earlier this week based on a 2017 executive order by President Trump aimed at reducing the country's vulnerabilities to a reliance on imports of the minerals such as uranium, titanium, and rare earth elements. Much like Washington's ban cut Huawei off from key components, a move by China to cut rare earth exports could hit American tech firms hard. But how quickly Beijing is looking to move and how effective a ban might be is less than certain. Lao Kun, chief economist at China's state-owned CITIC Bank International, says it's clear from what's been said about rare earths that it is a weapon that Beijing could use. He says that's not likely that Beijing will reach for it anytime soon, but the situation could quickly escalate if President Trump slaps tariffs on all remaining Chinese goods exported to the United States. To get a better understanding about how Western nations might deal with such a move, I spoke via Skype with Tracy A. Moore, president and CEO of the Canada Rare Earth Corporation in Vancouver.
The restriction of rare earths leaving China would enhance our business case greatly, but the business to get into business of the rare earths takes many, many years. So I don't think there would be an immediate positive effect other than the business case is better. In other words, to create a rare earth mine, for example, takes many years. To create the processing of the concentrate derived from the mines takes many years, special skills, a lot of money, and then a lot of extensive experience in operating the rare earth processing facilities.
Are there any mines either in construction or already underway in Canada or the United States?
In Canada, I'm not aware of any. There's some interesting prospects, but I would say no. And in the United States, I'm aware of one, and that's the Molycorp property, which was acquired by a consortium, including, to a small extent, a Chinese entity.
For those who are unaware, what are rare earths used for?
National Geographic, back in 2011, had an article entitled "The Secret Chinese Ingredients of Everything." And the article is quite general, but the title of the article is quite catchy and encompasses, you know, the general concept that rare earths are involved with everyday life to a very great extent. So telecommunications, electronics, electric vehicles, hybrid vehicles, even regular vehicles, polishing powders on lenses, cracking of oil, the tinting on windshields in cars, guidance systems on missiles, laptops, cell phones, the list goes on and on.
How is your business preparing for the possibility of China banning rare earths, at least to the United States?
Well, our business focus is to set up processing facilities of rare earth concentrate. So we have a number of initiatives on the go where we have developing alliances with rare earth mines and projects also that where rare earths are a byproduct or even a waste product of other mining ventures. But so the sourcing is one thing, but then the processing is another. And the processing, in our view, is the key to the supply chain. And that's actually where China dominates the market.
Well, you being in Canada, that would mean that possibly, at least in the beginning, that you would still be able to get the stuff to process from China, correct?
Well, rare earths are found everywhere. Not necessarily in mineable quantities, but there's a lot of rare earths found, particularly in the southern hemisphere. We're focusing primarily in South America, but also in Southeast Asia for sourcing, as well as Africa.
All right, as
Right.
so as far as percentages are concerned, where would you put the geographic areas that you most use?
For sourcing material, South America is at this time probably 70 to 75%,
That much.
and then there's some Africa situations that are interesting, and also in Southeast Asia.
From where, other than China?
I'd rather not mention those countries for proprietary reasons.
Okay, no, I understand that. How big of a business is yours, and how many people are in competition still?
Our business is our core team is about 12 people. Most of those are not working on a full-time basis, but they're advisors and pulled in to situations to add their expertise as on an as-needed basis. And then locally in various countries, we establish teams of people, which could be anywhere from a few people to maybe 10 or 20 people. I think it's important to understand the supply chain. Companies in the commodity business tend to, explore, hopefully create a mine, hopefully produce a concentrate, and then the concentrate needs to be processed. The processing in the rare earth industry is particularly difficult and unique. And then once the concentrate is processed, you create the oxides, which can be used for metals or alloys. So it's in our view, it's the processing that's the key. Obviously, finding the material in the ground is important, but for many companies, unless they have a solution for for processing the concentrate, they'll have to deal with China for the processing.
What about environmental effects of the processing? And the mining, too, for that matter.
Right. It's always an issue, but there are ways of mitigating the situation. But typically, depending on the mineral that's hosting the rare earths, there can be a greater or lesser amount of radioactivity. And that's one of the biggest issues, is how to properly handle and store or deal with the radioactivity, which is sort of a waste or byproduct from the processing. Right? And so that's the biggest issue we encounter in establishing rare earth processing facilities. So for example, for the amount of rare earths that, say, would be in a ton of concentrate, it might be something like, say, 50% rare earths. There would be about 5% would be radioactivity, particularly thorium. 90% of the 5% would be thorium, and then the balance would be primarily uranium.
So miners have to be protected, do they not?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Are they in
Yeah.
China? Do you know?
I know personally that China is taking environmental aspects more and more seriously. And I know of one refinery in particular that spent millions and millions of dollars and have had to go through all sorts of regulatory, checks and balances to make sure that they can operate.
Tracy A. Moore, President and CEO of the Canada Rare Earth Corporation in Vancouver. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now at voanews.com. President Trump says he'll decide whether to impose new tariffs on China after the G20 summit in Japan later this month. Trump has threatened new tariffs on another $300 billion worth of Chinese goods. As Russian President Vladimir Putin met with Chinese leader Xi Jinping at the Kremlin, both agreed on a joint statement voicing support for Iran. U.S. lawmakers and human rights advocates are accusing China of exporting authoritarianism and prodding governments around the world to spy on and control their citizens. Taiwan says it's formally made a request to the United States to purchase new state-of-the-art military tanks and anti-tank missile systems, a move that drew an angry response from China. This is VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump says diplomatic efforts with North Korea are going well, even as Pyongyang is warning its patience is wearing thin. In a statement coinciding with the one-year anniversary of Trump's summit with Kim Jong-un in Singapore, a North Korean foreign ministry official Wednesday warned the U.S. would be well advised to change its current method of calculation. VOA diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has more from the State Department.
On a stop in Ireland, President Donald Trump said media reports that North Korea's top envoy to the U.S. had been executed after the failed Hanoi summit have been proven false. He also expressed optimism about the apparently stalled talks with Kim Jong-un on denuclearization.
I think that Chairman Kim would like to make a deal, and I'd like to make a deal with him. I look forward to seeing him at the appropriate time.
Exactly 1 year after the agreement signed by Kim and Trump in Singapore, a North Korean foreign ministry official said that if Washington doesn't change its approach, the agreement would turn out to be a mere sheet of paper. A summit this February in Vietnam between Kim and Trump broke down over disagreements on how to match the pace of sanctions relief with steps to dismantle North Korea's nuclear program. Experts say North Korea has been largely silent since the failed Hanoi talks. China may also have been distracted from the North Korea nuclear issue as it continues its trade battle with the U.S., say some analysts.
The main impact of trade tensions between the U.S. and China is to lower the priority of North Korea as an issue on the agenda of U.S.-China relations. And so it's going to be harder to get China to cooperate as much as the United States would like because they're focused on other issues in the relationship.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and his next diplomatic moves remain an enigma for observers. They are also wondering why he temporarily suspended the country's famous Grand Mass Gymnastics and Artistic Performance after attending its premiere this week. Cindy Sain, VOA News, the State Department.
Happening now in Asia, Nepal Thursday urged friends and families of four climbers whose bodies were brought down from Mount Everest to come forward and identify them as the deadliest climbing season since 2015 came to an end. The corpses retrieved as part of a cleanup of the world's tallest mountain lie unclaimed in a hospital morgue in Nepal's capital of Kathmandu. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are happy you're with us. Police raided the offices of the Australian Broadcasting Corporation Wednesday after allegations it had published classified material. The Australian Federal Police said its officers carried out a search warrant on the national broadcaster's headquarters in Sydney and met with its legal team. The network says the search is in retaliation to a series of stories reported in 2017 by the network's investigative journalist that revealed allegations of misconduct by Australian Special Forces in Afghanistan. ABC's editorial director, Craig McMurtry, called the search a very unwelcome and serious development.
We will be doing everything we can to limit the scope of this, and we will do everything we can to stand by our reporters. And as a general observation, we always do whatever we can to stand by our sources, of course. And the other thing I just want to make the point of is this was outstanding reporting. It's 2 years ago. It was challenging content. It was looking at the conduct of special forces in Afghanistan. It wasn't an easy subject matter to report on, but I invite anybody who wants to have another look at that content to take a look at it, because it was clearly in the public interest, and sometimes difficult truths have to be told.
The ABC offices came a day after police raided the home of an editor for News Corp about the report about the government's bid to gain powers to spy on the domestic communications of Australian citizens. Coming your way, a new way to teach, envelope the student in sight and sound. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Special English. A way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com. For 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.
This news from VOA Asia. Japan's health minister said in response to a petition seeking a ban on requiring women to wear high heels at work that such dress code expectations are necessary and appropriate in the workplace. The petition, which has collected 21,000 online signatures and is still growing, was submitted on Monday to the health ministry by a 32-year-old funeral parlor worker. This is VOA Asia. At the Tribeca Film Fest in New York City, filmmakers are mining current and historical events for inspiration. For tech-savvy youth, it's one way to ensure the lessons of history will not be forgotten. Tina Trin reports.
Could virtual reality be headed to the classroom? It seems possible, considering many of the VR films at the recent Tribeca Film Festival drew inspiration from current and historical events.
Virtual reality is a wonderful tool for education, to put on a headset and learn about history, learn about the solar system in such an immersive way.
Accused number two, Walter Sisulu, uses the real-life audio recordings of the Rivonia trial, which resulted in the imprisonment of Nelson Mandela and fellow anti-apartheid activist Sisulu.
VR technology is amazing because it allows you to feel the story in ways that maybe text alone wouldn't.
12 Seconds of Gunfire uses 360-degree animation to tackle the current issue of school shootings.
We wanted to tell it from the child's point of view. In their world, everything is bright and colorful.
It feels like something that could be fiction, but it's all real.
The technology can be a vehicle for exploring other turbulent times. In Ash 68, Rex Miller and Beth Hubbard examined the civil rights era through the lens of tennis legend Arthur Ashe.
He had a lot of pressure on him, obviously, to win the U.S. Open 1968 that day at a full white, all-white tennis club.
It's a new platform for imparting lessons of the past, and directors like Chris Lang are working with schools like New York University to bring VR to classrooms.
We are going to be doing the groundbreaking experiment of having a completely virtual classroom with 60 students learning computer science.
But the technology has its drawbacks.
It's expensive. You need a big rig or a big PC computer to like run these things. And where it is right now, it's kind of hard for schools to take that in.
With the advent of 3D technology, films are starting to take learning off the page. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
Another news break from VOA Asia. A court in Vietnam sentenced a Facebook user to 6 years in prison Thursday for a series of posts he made on the social media platform, which the Southeast Asian country's government said were anti-state. All the big stories coming your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. They are called biocurtains, and for one small firm, they lie somewhere between environmental engineering and art. These unique installations are filled with algae that suck up carbon and emit oxygen, and they could be one small element involved with engineering our way out of catastrophic climate change. VOA's Kevin Enox reports.
This green biogel material is living algae that lives primarily on carbon and emits oxygen into the atmosphere. Marco Paletto from Ecologic Studio is pumping this gel into curtains that can then be hung outdoors on walls.
Okay, so photosynthetica really is artificial habitats to host living cultures of cyanobacteria. Cyanobacteria are microalgae, little cells that are extremely powerful photosynthetic machine. They convert the energy from the sun and they capture CO2 and most of the particles and gases in the air, and they enclose them into their body mass.
Paletto says 1 square meter of biogel can suck up 31 grams of carbon a day and emit 24 grams of oxygen. He and his partner, Claudio Pasquero, say the carbon isn't just stored, but transformed into biomass that can then be used for other things.
It's not extracted from the air and stored, but it's transformed in the growth and photosynthesis of the microalgae. So effectively become a biomass that can be used for food purpose and different health purpose like beauty industry, pharmaceutical industry, could also be used for energy.
The biogel doesn't last forever. It has to be changed about every 2 weeks. Still, Paletto says the biogel deals with carbon pollution so efficiently, it makes sense to deploy it in an urban environment.
Just to give you a very simple term of comparison, we calculated that 2 square meters of the curtain have the same ability to capture CO2 than a large tree. Now, if you compare the weight and the space that they occupy, it gives us a 1-to-10 ratio of efficiency.
Curtains have already been commissioned to hang on buildings in Europe and were featured at a technology expo in Paris. Depending on the size of the space, the company can create a custom-sized curtain for anywhere from $300 to $2,000. Kevin Enox, VOA News.
McDonald's stores all across the United States on Thursday accepted any amount of foreign currency in exchange for an item on what they're calling the Worldwide Favorites menu. The global franchise has thousands of stores across the globe with unique items on each country's menus. VOA Asia's Anna Cook made a special trip to a nearby Mickey D's.
The Worldwide Favorites menu included the Grand Mc Extreme Bacon Burger from Spain, Stroop Waffle McFlurry from the Netherlands, Tomato Mozzarella Chicken Sandwich from Canada, and Cheesy Bacon Fries from Australia. John Lynch, a Maryland native visiting D.C. with his friend for the weekend, found the experience a pleasant surprise.
It was certainly nice getting to experience this new out-of-the-country experience, if I have to say so. And, bacon bits, cheese on fries, it's certainly not what I was expecting to eat today, but it's very good and I'm glad I got it.
There are more than 36,000 McDonald's stores in over 100 countries. The owner-operator of the McDonald's store in Roslyn, Virginia, Carlos Mateos, says this is an exciting promotion that allows customers to get a global experience.
This is going to be all across the country. So any McDonald's that you go into, we're selling these Worldwide Favorites. Oh, I'm glad that we didn't just do all 4 recipes from one country. We just really went all around the world and brought them here.
McDonald's stores in the U.S. will continue to rotate favorites from around the world for a limited time. Anna Cook, VOA News, Washington.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Remember to get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Find us at voanews.com and let us hear from you. VOA Asia Facebook, also our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Zeynab Abdel-Rahman, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Skylar Ogden, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. Thank you to our listeners in our network of radio stations around Asia, such as Radioactive and Tamasek Polytechnic in Singapore, and CCU Radio at National Chung Cheng University in Taipei. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Enjoy your day.